So of late, I've been exploring what consciousness is, just kind of as a secondary thing in the back of my mind. There are three Buddhist terms that are used regarding mind. Citta for mind, is it citta or citta?
Citta.
Citta. And then for cognition and thought is manas. And then for consciousness, it's vijnana. And I guess what the aspect of consciousness that it piques my curiosity is what powers it? Is it metabolic, like the biomedical people here are exploring? Is it a cosmic force of some kind? Because we're all full of consciousness right now, and somehow we got it, you know. So, consciousness is, more precisely, I consider it a function and process that gives us awareness. So is consciousness a thing, or is it a process? So mind is where cognition and consciousness come from, the citta. It is considered the seed of awareness. But there's also small mind and big mind. And there is confusion among them, of those of us who think about it. For those who don't think about it, there is no confusion. For example, when our cognition kicks in, it's like the porridge is hot, too hot. The porridge is cold, or it's so too salty. And that's where our consciousness comes in, and we begin to wonder what the cook did. But already we're several steps away from the core experience of the hot and the cold. Fundamentally, this reality is what it is. With food is what it is. Just this is it. This circumstance is what it is. And we gather here today, here we are. We each traveled to get here, whether we live here, or came from down the hill somewhere. We all traveled here, and here we are, and right now, in this moment, we are the fullest of our being that we have ever been. Hopefully, we arrived with our fingers and toes intact. And also our eyebrows. Now, our eyebrows have a long history that goes back to our ancestors. And so the formation of our eyebrows are a full embodiment of what our ancestors have provided us, whether they are trimmed or not. So our eyebrows completely manifest eyebrow, fully evolved, and exactly what they are now. So here we are. Please sit upright. We are a bag full of protoplasm. With all its facets and ailments, and each facet and even ailment has momentum from previous conditions. From Lex Hickson's Mother of the Buddhas, he has a piece in here that struck me. He says, I'm not sure, Judy, quite how this relates, but it's important to me anyway. Beings benefit each other consciously or unconsciously. Even enemies become profound benefactors in subtle ways. Those who clearly perceive this radical principle find no isolated object for hostile thought. They can discover and encounter only friends, benefactors, and inseparably related beings. This insight avoids aggressive thinking and allows the mind to expand endlessly with wholesomeness, generosity, and sympathy. So I think this passage comes from before a whole lot of thought. Maybe it includes a lot of thought. But when we can even embrace our enemies as benefactors, we've got something useful. So what gives reality momentum? Is it space-time? Is it the golden radiance of Dharmakaya, the Vairochana Buddha? The momentum of the expanding universe, for me, is inconceivable. We can think about momentum and the meaning of it. But imagine the masses of all of the solar systems in our galaxy in motion, and imagine trying to slow their momentum. It would take It's unstoppable.
It takes something outside the system, and there's nothing outside the system. Right?
Right. So can we feel the momentum of the expanding universe? I'm wondering if that's a feeling that we can have, or if that's just a delusionary thought we have. Can we feel our eyebrows feel where they come from, feel how the thread of our ancestors dictate the character of our eyebrows, feel the growing of our eyebrows molecule by molecule. This feeling is cognition. So mind is the seed that bears the fruit of thought and consciousness. Mind is the seed that bears the fruit of mind, of thought and consciousness. This mind, the citta, is a place before eyes, ears, and consciousness. It is a place where the stone woman dances and the iron man sings. So we sit in our Zen practice. And where do we find the radiance to direct our attention to? When we sit and meditate, we turn our attention within, and then the germinations of thought bubbles manifest. So is it this primordial radiance that powers this germination of thought and experience? And what powers that radiance, this radiance?
He knows.
He knows. Imagine matter packed so tightly together that protons and neutrons are rubbing against each other. Under such huge forces of gravity and heat and electromagnetism that they are even in turbulence. Is that possible? Or have all categories collapsed at that point? But turbulence is an aspect of our life. And imagine turbulence in air, in water, turbulence in smoke rising, turbulence in the motions of and currents on the sun, turbulence is a spin-off of matter flowing, and matter flows in typically in turbulent flow and laminar flow. And moving down the highway in traffic, with traffic, we are in laminar flow generally.
Is laminar point to point?
It's like parallel flowing. Like when water flows through a pipe at a slow velocity, it is just...
That's laminar.
It is laminar. And then when the velocity gets too high, it becomes turbulent. But when we navigate through traffic and there's stoppage up ahead, and we've got deadlines ahead of us, the traffic comes to a stop and is no longer either laminar nor turbulent, but inside us, we are turbulent, anxious, angry, maybe even aggressive at what we are confounded with. Now, so turbulence is a big part of our life. And one way I engage in turbulence is by digging. And people here know and maybe even think that I love to dig. But in fact, I don't think it's a love. I think it's more of a feeling compelled to do what I do. And I think each of us has our own ways of being compelled to do what we must do. And that happens to be my manifestation, and it's what it is. But everybody moves product. Now, it may sound silly to call dirt product, but it is a material going from one place to another. It's also composed of lots of little parts that have been hidden for a long time. Dirt. Some of the dirt is even in my under my fingernails still. Still there.
So even giving a talk would be moving product, huh?
Moving product. So how do we take best care of moving product? In a way, when I dig in and get a scoop of dirt, I have caused disturbance. And now what? It can't go back in the same hole. Some could spill back in, but it could go into a vessel to transport, and then it can go to another place where it continues to be exposed to sunlight. So even part of my bodhisattva practice is to bring light to dirt. One grain at a time. So some may think that dirt does not have consciousness, but it occupies space. When you push it, it pushes back. It is in contact with other particles around it, and it exhibits properties that can be measured. So in a way, it has some fundamental kind of consciousness. To me, it indicates just a modicum of consciousness. And maybe I'm wrong. So how to deal with turbulence that we are in the midst of and that we generate? When going to the beach, and if you go body surfing, you could be at a beach where there are riptides, and the riptides can carry you out, and you could feel quite disturbed, distraught by being pulled away from the beach, pulled out in a riptide. And yet, being aware of a riptide allows you to go with the flow. Either allow yourself to go out with it instead of fighting its current to try to get back to the beach because all you're doing is being pulled away. Or you navigate with it or cut across it to a zone where there is no turbulent or flow, riptide flow. And so I think these are metaphors that might reflect on aspects of our life. back to the aspects of mind and the purpose, the core purpose of it. This is from the Denko Roku by Zen Master Kaizen. And he talks about the enlightenment experiences of many of the previous masters. And he was, I think, three generations after Dogen. But in the section on Dogen, he writes, or it's translated what he wrote, "Learning the way is said to be apart from mind, thought, and consciousness. These must not be thought of as body and mind. There is still a wonderful brightness that is eternally unmoving. If you look carefully, you will certainly reach it. If you are able to clarify this mind, no body and mind can be found. No self and others can be involved. Therefore, it is said, drop off body and mind. At this point, if you look intensely, even with 1,000 eyes, there is not an atom of anything called skin, flesh, bones, and marrow. Nothing to be discriminated as mind, thought, or consciousness. How can you then be aware of warmth and cold, or discern pain or tickle? What is there to affirm or deny? What is there to like or dislike? Therefore, it is said, when you look, nothing is there. When Dogen personally experienced this place, he said, body and mind are dropped off." So how do you deal with body and mind? How do you move product? How do your preferences affect your relationship with turbulence? Can you find the iron woman and the stone man? Can you find the source within that powers the germination of thought and discernment? And is this power the same that powers an acorn to become an oak tree? Thank you. Any comments, questions, ideas? Yes, Lance.
Could you read the quotation again?
The last one?
Yeah, the like Kaizen.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Kaizen about Dogen? Coming in on Dogen.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
"Learning the way is said to be apart from mind, thought, and consciousness." Okay, is that enough? "There must not be thought, these must not be thought of as body and mind. There is still a wondrous brightness that is eternally unmoving. If you look carefully, you will certainly reach it. If you are able to clarify this mind, no body and mind can be found. No self and others can be involved."
It's coincidental. I went, as you know, to this training I brought along this paper on consciousness with me because I knew I would get bored. But I'm not going to fight trying to be bored. I'll have something to. But yeah, after reading through all that, as always, I had no real understanding of what consciousness is or isn't. And that quotation sort of gets at it. I mean, any time we try to conceptualize and pinpoint something down, and the deeper we look at it, it tends to just vanish.
Mm-hmm.
In this, as they say, in the light. But fortunately, we don't have to conceptualize, do we? It's great that we have these kids came in today. They're just these little sparks, aren't they? I look at them, they're just the energy. They're like sort of vibrating with it.
Acorns?
They're acorns, yeah. It's good, I think, to make some attempt linguistic. It can flesh things a bit or just give you a greater sense of your own confusion and the mystery of being alive. But, you know, you don't have to just pound on the door like that, like the child was doing earlier. You have to live, right? So you have to dig for you.
Well, we each move product. So how do you move product?
With a drum set.
Yeah. Most of the time, flapping my lips.
Doug, I like the notion of putting the shovel in the ground, and you're doing something that can't be undone, because you're never going to get those grains of dirt that you've moved back into the spot where you just moved them from. It's an irreversible disturbance that we're making, and it's metaphor for all of our actions, right?
Mm-hmm.
We can't interact with the world without creating irreversible changes. And when you talk about laminar flow and turbulent flow, a laminar flow has a special property, which is not fully real. It's kind of an idealized property of being reversible. Laminar flow doesn't cause enough disturbance to create entropy. And the creation of entropy is associated with irreversibility, whereas turbulent flow does create entropy and is thus irreversible. In reality, even laminar flow creates some heating between the molecules, and it also creates, therefore it also creates entropy, but in some way laminar flow is like the it doesn't make wakes. It actually doesn't make wakes. And there's another water metaphor that I like, which is creating wakes. If you swim across smooth water, or you go in a boat across smooth water, you can't do it without disturbing the surface of the water and creating a wake. And that wake goes out behind you in a V, like a duck, you know, swimming across the pond, and the V expands behind the duck. You'll never see it going in the other direction. You never see a duck swimming across a pond and a V coming out in front of it. You know? And the V coming, the ripples coming in to meet the duck. You never see that, because things have a definite arrow of going forward. And anyway, all of us, these are the thoughts that I had when you were saying, all of us have both the, as humans, the tendency to create wakes. We can't live without creating these wakes, and we can't live without being susceptible to the wakes of that have been created by before us.
And by others around us.
By others around us, and by the and by the non-living and the living things around us, those mm-hmm. weights comprise our compulsions to dig or to whatever program computers or whatever it is that we, that whatever product it is that we move. We can't escape the fact that we live on the surface of water that contains wakes created by others who are swimming in that water, and that in doing so we create wakes of our own. And knowing that we can't avoid doing that, we have to make a wake. We have to. Knowing that we have to do that, we're faced with this choice, you know.
Of what? How to do it? Or what's the choice?
I don't know. I think.
See, that's where this first first thing is helpful, in that from the mother of the Buddhas, where even enemies become profound benefactors in subtle ways. There is no isolated object for hostile thought. They can discover and encounter only friends, benefactors, and inseparably related beings. And do this with wholesomeness, generosity, and sympathy. I think when... So maybe that's the choice, is you have a choice of doing it wholesomely, generously, or very angrily, tightly, arrogantly. There are a lot of different ways to go, but fundamentally it doesn't need to have anything but generosity and wholesomeness about it in the wakes we make.
So to connect the first and the second lecture, so the first is saying that you need to find connection. So the everything is part of it, the relations. And that drops, the second part is drop your body and your mind, so dropping that makes you available to being part of everything and deciding if your actions will be driven by, you know, selfish or emotions, or selfish state emotions, or to open instead and do more selfishness. And then being connected makes you available to be part of, you know, the relations, that the wholesomeness that you're saying. And so you can't avoid turbulence, but you can decide if flowing with it or resist to that and increase entropy in a way.
So when a tidal wave comes, you grab your surfboard.
And you surf it.
And you surf it. Maybe not, a tidal wave is not the, maybe a storm wave, because tidal waves aren't surfable. But storm waves are. And that's what happened here. I created a bit of a disturbance. I create disturbance. I create turbulence here at Jokoji. And with the work projects that happened here. And we had high surf and a lot of people brought their surfboards and we moved a lot of dirt. It was really, really cool to have all that effort in this.
Yeah. It was very timely.
Last thing that I'll say, that the only the only wrong way to make wakes is not to realize that you're making them. Not to appreciate that.
Or to try and go back and hold on to that wake. That's another way of saying the same thing. Yeah.
Try to stop it or
hold it.
By causing, and cause more by trying to stop it. Or not knowing that your actions have effect in the world. That's not living consciously, I suppose. So we could get really concerned about whether in our life we create wholesome or unwholesome effects in the world, but just to know that we have an effect on the world is also something.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Todd?
But I have to say, I was thinking about my eyebrows. And you brought it up. So, to be conscious of my actions or things around me is not so easy as Jonathan is stating, quite intense. I mean, there are a lot of things that we think we're doing great good, in fact, but it's not necessarily, in hindsight, perhaps it's not necessarily the case.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of hard to be able to be thinking about my eyebrows all the time.
They disappear when you think about them a lot.
Yeah. The other thing I wanted to say is about what Mike said, because that seems really important about the product of talk. He said something like that. That you were talking about product, and you said, thank you, like talking. You could expand on that a little.
Everyone, before you go, we're about to end, and we're going to have lunch together, and you're invited to join us for lunch. Okay? Please.
I'm sorry. Well, just curious, in other words, you said about eyebrows, all of a sudden I said, oh, yeah, that's right, eyebrows. Wow, they go real. This is a product, right? It's turbulent, it's moving. You're giving me something, and I'm like, oh, yeah.
So you're saying just even my suggesting the word eyebrow.
Well, you started it with consciousness.
Okay.
So to me, this is nebulous somewhat, right? It's ethereal. You say something like a word, like eyebrow. So.
And your ancestors.
And the, and whatever. Whatever. And the idea of a V. Create. All of that. It's like a product. I don't know. I mean, it's not just dirt. In fact, I think you're right. It's wonderful what Jonathan said. How can you not? So then I thought of a duck just sitting.
Even when its pet is sitting there, paddling, around it's touching its feet, it's still creating.
It's not a V, though.
Circular ripples.
Yeah.
Sometimes practice is. They say you study consciousness when you practice, but you don't study study's not the right word. You don't meet the contents of consciousness necessarily, but consciousness itself. So we're kind of like connoisseurs of consciousness itself, like before words, before discursive thought. Maybe that's like trying to hold on to the wake or manipulate the wake. It's already.
A rock has a wake, too.
Great statement. You're right.
Why do you say that, Junior?
Well, it's true. I mean, The current is flowing around the rock. And
I see.
The rock is not.
Its wake goes downstream.
It's not still making the wake.
Yeah.
But.
Buts. He's a scientist, so he has to.
Yes.
I often think in terms of medicine.
Okay.
And flow is important for life. because the blood flow is what keeps us alive.
Mm-hmm.
And to be healthy, you need to have a laminar flow.
Mm-hmm.
And in the body, there are two situations that slows down the laminar flow and makes a turbulent flow. And it is when an artery becomes smaller. So mm-hmm. when the path of blood becomes
in the artery, in a vessel,
the path becomes smaller. So you have to go through a very narrow path. Or when the flow becomes too slow. And how the body deals with it is to speed up and just go through it. And this maintains the laminar flow instead of the turbulent flow. And I think it's kind of a powerful metaphor of overcoming the turbulence and overcoming the narrow
passages.
Yeah. By keeping going. And then it...
Keep digging.
Keep going. It has to keep going, otherwise...
Keep on trucking.
Thank you.
Thank you.